Good morning. You're listening to 2SER Radio, and it is time for Third Degree, our environment and social justice half hour. I am Simon Unwin. This week on the show, Orica parks 3,000 tonnes of explosives in a boat in Newcastle Harbour, and an Australian company is suing Malaysian community groups who are opposing a controversial mineral refining facility there. So first, Orica's troubled Kooragang Island plant is again the source of concern for Newcastle residents. With maintenance shutting down operations for a few weeks, Orica was left holding thousands of tonnes of ammonium nitrate with nowhere to store it. So with on-site storage constraints and other locations still at the development application approval stage, this meant that the company's response was to send the excess 3,000 tonnes of ammonium nitrate out to sea. The MCP Copenhagen has become a temporary floating storage facility for this hazardous material. The Third Degree's Jess Minchell reports.
It can't be too much of a stretch to say that cargo ships in Newcastle provide a little spectator sport. Locals do stop to watch tugboats lead ships into port, and many eyes have been trained from childhood to count the specks of large ships dotting the horizon. But since the weekend, many may well have been looking out to sea asking, which boat is the one full of explosives?
We would say it's a totally inappropriate way to store such a hazardous substance. It's no small amount, definitely, and if it went up, it would be a very big explosion.
That's Dr. Marianne Lloyd-Smith, Senior Advisor to the National Toxics Network. She says the ammonium nitrate from Orica's Kooragang Island plant is used in Australian mining operations.
Definitely explosives. It's used for the mining industry. Orica provides ammonium nitrate as an explosive right through Queensland, Western Australia, New South Wales. Most of the ammonium nitrate that is developed for fertiliser is done by a small company in Western Australia. So Orica's is primarily explosives.
It's explosive, and such an explosive material does have strict storage and handling requirements.
Well, basically, there has to be very strong record keeping. It must be secure so that it cannot be stolen, which is one of the big issues. Of course, being a hazardous substance, it comes under the Dangerous Goods Act. So there are a whole range, a raft of controls, which, you know, I suppose the company must be adhering to some degree, but it does seem strange that storage on a ship fits within these controls. And it's probably worth remembering that we've already had, or Orica has already had, one big problem with ammonium nitrate on a ship. Your listeners may remember a ship that went down off the Brisbane coast about 2 years ago. It was carrying Orica's ammonium nitrate. It resulted in the loss of a lot of containers and a massive oil spill as well. So, you know, they've got a bit of a history there, which I think makes everyone much more cautious.
Ammonium nitrate is produced at the Kooragang Island plant, with some material stored on site. So what then are the dangers of this material being on a boat in a harbour or out at sea, as opposed to at the plant in Stockton, where there are residents close by?
Yes, well, I certainly don't think that a chemical like this should be stored in a community, and certainly we have real problems about the proposal to expand the production of this chemical, which would mean, of course, increased storage. But needless to say, because one form of storage is inappropriate, does not make shipping it out and putting it on a boat and having it out in the harbour as appropriate.
Orica's series of leaks and spills from the Kooragang Island plant last year did bring the company's record back into the spotlight. I asked Marianne Lloyd-Smith how this reflects on other industry players and on the industry itself, when Orica is one of the largest and also one of the more practiced in handling such material.
You're absolutely right. Orica is the largest explosive company in the world. It's a very big firm. Until 1996, it was ICI Australia. Now, unfortunately, ICI and Orica have not got a history that I would be proud of. We're still dealing with Orica and ICI's waste, which is stored at the Botany plant, a massive tonnage of some of the most hazardous chemicals. So just because they're a big company, I don't think means that they are, you know, absolutely super in the way they manage and deal with things. And I think last year showed us that if a big company can get things so wrong, then what is happening with our smaller companies? Certainly, we don't have the inspectors on the ground to make sure things are going well. We've had 20 years of a very self-regulatory approach, which, you know, must by now have to come to an end. If a big company like Orica can't get it right, what on earth is happening with the small companies? And what is the EPA and the state government doing about it?
So that's Dr. Marianne Lloyd-Smith, Senior Advisor to the National Toxics Network, speaking with the Third Degree's Jessica Minchell. In Malaysia, Australian mining company Lynas Corporation has seen fierce criticism of its plans to operate a controversial rare earths processing plant in Kuantan. The debate's been raging for more than a year, but now Lynas is suing a local campaign group and an alternative news site for defamation. And unlike in Australian law, Malaysian law crucially has no cap on damages that can be awarded for defamation.
In Malaysia, there is no such limit, and very often you would find people in high places, influential bodies, corporate and individuals, suing for defamation and making a claim for a specific amount. I have one example from a recent case where the amount that the complainant was suing for was 500 million ringgit, which works out to about 160 million Australian dollars. So you can tell, you know, there's a huge difference.
That was Associate Professor Joseph Fernandez, head of Curtin University's Journalism Department. We'll hear more from him later. Rare earths are a group of 17 metals used in many high-tech applications, from smartphones to smart bombs to wind turbines. The world market in rare earths is largely supplied by China. So Australia's Lynas Corporation wants to refine ore from its Western Australian rare earths mine at an advanced minerals plant near the city of Kuantan, Malaysia. But the local Save Malaysia, Stop Lynas campaign has been extremely vocal in its opposition to the project. Local fears about rare earths are in part due to Malaysia's fraught history with the industry. The Mitsubishi Group operated a rare earths refinery at Bukit Merah in northern Malaysia until the plant was shut down in 1992 amidst concerns regarding spikes in birth defects and rates of leukemia nearby. It does remain one of Asia's largest radioactive waste cleanup sites. The Save Malaysia Group claims that the design and location of Lynas's Kuantan plant is unsafe and that it will contaminate the area with radioactive waste and heavy metals. Lynas strongly denies these claims, but the project has been delayed again and again due in part to Save Malaysia's strong campaigning on the issue, which has forced greater scrutiny of the plant's development. Here's Noor Jahan Abu Bakar from the Save Malaysia Stop Lynas Group, speaking last year about her experience of Lynas's consultation with the community.
One of the reasons why we are here today is also because the lacking of public consultation between Lynas and our government with us, the stakeholder. We are the people who are going to live around this plant, but we have not been consulted. When we knew about it, it came out in the New York Times, and we read it on the internet. And then, after a bit of uproar from the people who are living around that area, only then did they try to organize consultation with us. They scheduled 10, but after 3, they stopped because people came with information. People came equipped with printouts from internet. People came equipped with printout from New York Times. And what they say contradicted with everything else. And so, one of the reasons why we are here today is because our voices are not being heard there. We need to shout out to another form of society. There we are. I mean, we are together, the people of Kuantan, but the higher ups do not listen much to us. That's why we are here today.
Last year, Sydney was visited by representatives from Save Malaysia Stop Lynas, who wanted to take their message to Lynas's front door.
When we learned about it, we were very, very worried. And then do a lot of research through the internet on what is rare earth. And we found that to extract rare earth from rare ore, the process itself produces a lot of toxic waste in the form of radioactivity. Now, it not only produces radon gas, it also produces other type of radioactive gas. And then it takes a lot of acid to dissolve the ore in order to extract the rare earth elements. Just to give you a rough estimate, in a year, the solid waste produced by this factory can cover a football field up to 4-story high.
That was Bunteet Tan, another spokesperson for the group, speaking at a forum in Sydney last year to explain his understanding of the plant's possible byproducts.
So this Lynas will refine the rare earth ore, take the rare earth element and sell it to the world market. And we are left holding the toxic baby called radioactive waste, which contains thorium as well as uranium. And hopefully, fellow members of tonight's meeting, you will do your part and tell the Australian public that for a company, a corporate citizen of Australia, to export industry of this nature to a country that does not have strict environmental law is ethically and morally unjustifiable.
Bunteet Tan again there of Save Malaysia Stop Lynas, voicing opposition to the rare earths processing plant in his hometown. So most recently, an appeal from the group to Malaysia's Science Ministry last month caused the project to be delayed again, and Lynas's share price suffered. Lynas have said in statements that they have complied with all applicable regulations from the Malaysian government and the International Atomic Energy Agency, and that debate around the rare earths processing plant should be based on fact. And they're now taking alternative news website Free Malaysia Today and Save Malaysia Stop Lynas to court. To understand more about the defamation case, we spoke to Associate Professor Joseph Fernandez, Head of Journalism at Curtin Uni in Perth. Joseph was also Editor-in-Chief of a daily newspaper in Malaysia for 14 years. We asked him what the possible outcomes of this case could be.
Very often people think that the moment an action is filed, that the defendant's goose is cooked, if I can put it that way. In other words, many people think that the moment the action begins, the defendant is stuffed. It is not necessarily that case, because now the action, if it gets up to trial, if it doesn't get diffused before trial is listed, then the defendant has the opportunity to respond with a defense. And there are many defenses available to a defamation defendant. One is you can prove that it is true, and truth is a complete defense, both in Australia and in Malaysia. You can also claim or argue or show that it was an honest opinion or a fair comment. And in this particular case, I would think that people who are protesting against a hazardous operation should be entitled to complain, should be entitled to protest. That, of course, does not mean they should be given a license to spread falsehoods and lies. I don't know enough details about whether their statements were false, whether they will fail to prove the substance of the allegations that they are making against the Australian company. That is something that will be revealed when and if the trial gets started.
I'm not sure, just from statements that Nick Curtis of the Lynas Corporation has been making to media, if they've publicly identified which particular comments they believe have defamed the company.
I suspect those particulars will be in the court documents. Usually when an action is started, they must identify precisely what statements or claims the other side has made that they are complaining about, and I'm pretty sure that they have done that.
Lynas Corporation is suing the Save Malaysia Stop Lynas Community Group, who have been opposing their rare earths processing plant in Kuantan. And now they're suing for defamation. Is this something that could happen in Australia in a similar case?
It would be very unlikely that such a case would be brought against protesters in the action called defamation. Some other type of action, perhaps, but not quite in defamation.
What specifically in this case is Lynas trying to achieve, do you think?
Number one, I think by choosing defamation as its action against the other parties, it is suggesting that its reputation has been harmed, damaged, and it is seeking a remedy for damage to its reputation. That's what happens when people sue for defamation.
What are the main differences between Malaysian and Australian laws around defamation in this context particularly?
You know, historically, we were all about the same because we inherited our law from England, and Malaysia was a former British colony, and by virtue of that, it started off on the same foot as Australia insofar as defamation actions is concerned. But over the years, Australian defamation law has moved down a slightly different track with reforms that were tailored to meet Australia's needs. To a large extent, the defamation law that is observed in Malaysia is still pretty much the law that is enforced in England. Now, in Australia, we have moved down the path of respecting freedom of speech to a greater extent than we previously did. And one such step that Australia took in the middle of the last decade was to agree that damages, compensation, or money that can be awarded, damages should be capped at today's prices, $324,000. In other words, if you sued for defamation in Australia, generally speaking, the complainant should not expect to get more than $324,000, subject to some variations, of course. In Malaysia, there is no such limit. The second difference is there is a restriction on the types of entities that can sue in Australia. Big corporations can't sue. Mum and dad type firms, voluntary organizations, non-profit organizations are on a different plane compared to big organizations.
So only individuals and smaller companies can be said to have been defamed in Australia?
That's right, yeah. Or can bring an action in defamation. So big corporations are prevented from bringing an action in defamation.
What kind of impact do you think that this will have on that community groups, Save Malaysia, Stop Linus, their capacity to actually keep running their campaign?
Because of the high stakes involved, let's just hypothetically say that they are found liable, you could be looking at, you know, pretty staggering damages, and that could well destroy or neutralize that source of opposition. If it gets to a full-blown hearing, usually one party or the other realizes the futility of persisting in their position, whether as complainant or as defendant, and will try and come to some kind of settlement. So we don't know which way this is going to go. But one thing I can see from what I've read on the Malaysian news websites is that the groups that are protesting feel very strongly that this issue is something that they need to be speaking out on, because it is a matter of life and death. It's a major issue that causes a large community to feel anxious for their own welfare. I understand that the area in which this particular operation is going to be located has a population of about 10,000 people within a 5-kilometer radius of the plant. So that's a fairly large number of people. If they don't win this in the court forum, I'm sure there will be plenty of steam left in the political arena. And so at some point, I'm pretty sure politicians too will start to get in on the act. And in fact, many of them already are involved on both sides. It's a political hot potato. I might also add that I used to be a newspaper editor in Malaysia, and in that capacity, the media didn't do too well when it came to defamation actions. I'm just hoping that this group, because of the nature of the subject matter here, will have better luck.
So that was Joseph Fernandez of Curtin University speaking to The Third Degree yesterday. And in case you were wondering, Linus's share price certainly rose with the announcement of that defamation action. We also had another story regarding a defamation case brought by a mining company this week. Some of you might have seen on YouTube over the last couple of months the satirical ads put up by the Australian Manufacturing and Workers Union. The ads were spoofs of the Australian Mining This Is Our Story campaign, and those were put together by Charles Firth of The Chaser fame. Now, one of these videos has had to be taken down after Xstrata threatened legal action. And our newest third degree contributor, Cameron Whalen, actually spoke with Charles Firth this week about what's been happening with that. But we're actually waiting on some legal advice before we bring you that interview. So do watch this space, and hopefully we can bring that to you next week. But that is all we have time for this week on the third degree. You're on 2SER, and stay tuned for The Daily.